Good afternoon, everyone. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. We're at episode number 70, and it's a beautiful day in downtown Waterloo on our little studio location here at 108 King Street North. My guest today, and just delighted folks, Chase Phillips is in the studio. Hi, Chase.
Hello, Jeff.
We had picked a great day to get together to do this, I think. It's we're both in the agriculture business, and in a sense, it's looking forward to the spring. You know, it's not like that stuff we had last week, so... You're busy as usual, I guess?
Probably more busy than usual.
We'll talk all about that at the time. So to our listeners, you know, Chase very kindly was on our show about, when was that, about 6 months ago, I think?
July.
And then we had planned to do this again in September, but then your host very, very inconveniently had a mind fart and that event didn't happen, so we're just glad that now we can do this in this year. We're going to talk about crops, and we'll be back with that. In the meantime, let's play a few songs and some intros, and we'll be right back shortly.
I'm Subi Proud. This is my song Can't Unpave the Parking Lot on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. Gravel on County Road 9, in the heart of the fields and fresh air. Thought I left my worries behind, till I saw it standing there, larger than life development sign, cast a shadow on the autumn corn. Another subdivision's born. We can't unpave the parking lot. Paradise can't be an afterthought. Pay too high a price for what we buy. Take better care what we got. Can't unpave the behind brings me back to my senses, overwhelmed by this moment of truth. We bulldozed, stripped, and left it defenseless. We're turning trees into white picket fences. There's gotta be more we can do. Paradise can't be an afterthought. Pay too high a price for what we buy. Take better care what we got. Take better care what we got. Can I pave the gravel on County Road 9, in the heart of the fields and the fresh air.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. To the Lord of service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H,
for community and country.
4-H,
respond to food security.
4-H,
I gotta make your best better.
Well, folks, that's the 4-H ad from Jamaica, and I got that from John Drummond about a year or two ago, and I just like playing it because it's the 4-H logo, and
I think it's catchy.
Yeah, you were in 4-H for it by any chance?
No, please? I was not.
Okay, I was only in for a leader for a bit, but it's catchy. You're right about that. So, well, we're back, folks, and that's our first segment of today's show. I want to introduce you all to our guest today. His name is Chase Phillips, and I'll let him do most of the talking, but what's neat about it is his home is in New Liskeard, and that's a very special part of Ontario. And Chase, tell us, our listeners, about yourself.
Sure, Jeff. So I grew up in the Great White North, and that was kind of the topic of the other show that I was on here. I was riding shotgun with my dad, talking about opportunities in agriculture in Northern Ontario. But I grew up there, pretty low heat unit zone, so we're very limited on what we can grow, and we've touched on all that stuff before. But it was really interesting, a little bit of an isolated area. So after high school, I came down to the University of Guelph and pursued my education there. I got into the undergrad program in agronomy and loved it. In fact, I loved the city so much I tried not to leave. I did my... my master's degree there as well, and I did some of my research down in Ridgetown, so exploring the province a little bit, but I liked it so much that I dragged that out for about 6 years.
Yeah.
While I was working. I don't know, it's not official, but I think I have the record for the longest master's degree in that program, but yeah, part of the reason it took so long was because I was working full-time, and I've pretty much run the gamut. I've worked in the public and the private sector, and I've worked in every kind of facet of agriculture, from retail right through to research. I've been the grower, I've been the farmer out planting until 1 in the morning, and I've been the guy loading fertilizer for growers till 10 o'clock at night, or whenever it is, usually after dark, and in New Liskeard in the cold. So
yeah.
It's,
you must get a big chuckle out of our southern Ontario here, where last week, a week ago today was really a cold day, but that's probably...
That was just balmy weather for me, Jeff.
I believe it. So you've called the southern Ontario home for some time in the University of Guelph, and you're now living in Woodstock, I guess.
I got coerced over into Woodstock for professional reasons, so I'm exploring that town, and hopefully I can spend as much time as I spent in Guelph and enjoy it just as much. So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
I think I spent 10 or 11 years in Guelph. Love that place, but Woodstock's home. And
yeah.
Nice city.
Yeah, Guelph, good campus. That's my alma mater. It's been some time, and it certainly is fond memories up there. It's always nice to meet fellow Aggie graduates and what they've been doing. And often our paths intertwine.
It's certainly a small community when you get out there.
Yeah, and you see people who through either after Guelph, assuming in agriculture, you see people who you might have known from social circumstances or work or at the university at the same time, and it's just a big, a lot of connections there.
Yeah, the most dangerous is when you go to meetings and you recognize someone, but you completely forget their name. I had that experience a few times last week.
As you get older, it gets worse.
Great. Something to look forward to, I guess.
Oh, it's lots to look forward to, but it's really good to see all these people we knew from university, and it does help with what we're doing. So today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about crops and some science and so on and so forth, and that sort of ties in with how Chase and I met. Are you a certified agronomist now? Well, how do you describe yourself?
No, I've
you have a master's in plant, I have a
master's in plant breeding, specifically in soybean breeding.
Okay.
And my undergrad's in agronomy. I've managed to avoid the certified crop advisor course. I know that it's a lot of work to keep that up, and I'm pretty good at keeping myself busy in the meantime, so I don't have that professional designation, and I guess we'll see what the future holds, but so far I'm pretty comfortable not having it, and it hasn't slowed me down.
Yeah, yours is, we wear many hats, but yours is very much a science-based research, so
yep,
that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today, I think.
Yeah.
So Chase has got a real good bunch of stuff here we're going to talk about, folks, and in coming up to our next section here. And we're just going to preface it with that for our listeners out there who are not too sure what they think about modern crop production, we're not saying that your concerns about food safety, that's a normal human thing, and that's okay. But what we are going to do is try to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that Chase knows from a scientific standpoint about the issues of the day. So we don't want anyone to feel threatened or say you must listen to what we're saying. We recognize there are a lot of opinions on it, and we hope you listen to our show and you'll have another insight into how things are decided and why we do things the way we do.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Jeff.
Is that fair enough, I think?
Well, we're not here to sell people on anything, and really all I'd like to do today is just put a little more information out there. I know for myself in family settings and social settings, I get a lot of questions and people coming at me because of the knowledge that I have through my education and work experience and really life experience as well. And I've done this kind of same type of talk a dozen times now, so I figured might as well come on your show and share it with a wider audience.
And I'm very glad you did, because we're very happy on our show to have people from all aspects of agriculture. Basically, it's Agriculture 101 for our urban listeners, and we hope that various shows that we're doing help to clear that up for people if they have questions, and to just address, some of the issues that are out there. So that's a little introduction with Chase. We've actually known each other for a little while now, probably about 10 years, I think, huh?
It's getting up there, yeah.
I've been hosting a seed company, and they put out trials, and they're measuring things like yield and herbicide response and all kinds of stuff like that. So Chase, here he is, comes to my place with that parent seed company, and 10 years ago, I think. And
yeah, I don't mind saying that I was. The only reason I got hired on was because no one else wanted to do the job, so I said, sure, I'll do it, and day one, I met Jeff, and we've been friends ever since. So.
That's right, and so it's been it's just delightful to have, Chase, your career's really taken off well. You're full-time employed now with that company, and here you are with a whole new raft of responsibilities. And
new challenges all the time.
I know, so it's good. Let's play a song. Now, as our listeners know, I like to play the music that our guests like to listen to. And Chase very kindly brought along five songs. We'll play them. The first one up here is the AC/DC song. Tell our listeners about what that is and why you like this song.
So I kind of ordered the songs based on when I listened to them. So when I was growing up in Northern Ontario, I was heavily influenced by my dad's music. And
yeah.
AC/DC was a band that he was a big fan of, so I got a lot of it. And this is one I didn't want to take a mainstream one that everyone knows. This one's off the Razor's Edge album, and I enjoy it. It's a little bit more upbeat than some of the other stuff, but just a good tune.
All right, we're going to play that. Stay tuned, folks, and keep that dial locked in. It's the Agriculture Show, episode 70, on this January the 14th, 2014. We'll be right back. Okay, let's try that again later. I'm trying to get my songs lined up here, and these little promos aren't working. Oh my gosh, it's terrible. So let's get to section number two. And Chase, you got really a nice some hard work here on our schedule today. We're going to talk a bit about biotech foods, and I see lots of topics here. And I think a lot of people were interested, very much interested in this in the press, GMO stuff and all that kind of thing. I surely don't want to. I think we should just go right to, like, you've got a list here. It's just excellent. So, folks, today is my guest is Chase Phillips. So we're talking a little bit about this segment, biotech foods. And good little points here. I see you've written down this the most tested science in the world. That's quite amazing.
Yep. That's including public and private sector.
Mm-hmm. So... is there any value in talking about, like, there's genetically modified and genetically enhanced? I think most people don't really care one way or the other, but...
Yeah, I think just to keep things kind of general today, and what I'd like to do is just give some information, and I know, you know, and I mentioned talking in social settings and stuff like that. Hmm. People don't necessarily have a background in genetics like I do, so I have to reach out and find some analogies and things to... bring it to a level where people can understand, and I've got a pretty good one here that I came across. So I guess we'll just touch on originally way back when you and I first decided to do the show. The original idea was let's talk about kind of misleading statistics and how you can be fed misinformation in the media and stuff like that. And and I thought, well, why don't we why don't we zone in a little bit more on one of the most kind of hot button topics of our current world here.
Yeah.
And I can say last week, and I have to give credit here where credit's due. Last week I saw a very interesting presentation by Dr. Kevin Folta at the Southwest Ag Conference. He's the chair of the Department of Horticulture at the University of Florida, and he's a big advocate for genetic modification of foods. Actually, he doesn't really like the whole GMO term because it's got such a negative bias in the media.
Right.
So he just says biotech foods, but so everyone knows what we're talking about, I'll probably just use both of them interchangeably. Mm-hmm. As I just pull facts off the top of my head here.
That makes sense. I mean, over time, people will probably be able to differentiate these things, but we're just looking at first glance, top of the page, what do you see?
Yeah, and this information, the target that I'd like to get out to is kind of the housewives and the urban population that doesn't necessarily have a tie to agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hearing stuff on, you know, various media outlets and magazine articles, Dr. Oz, etc., Oprah. Mm-hmm. That are telling them that this stuff that 90% of growers in North America are growing is going to kill their kids and ruin their lives and all kinds of beautiful beautiful stuff. But before we get into that whole part of it, I thought it would be good to get everyone kind of on the same page and just talk about the science a little bit, to give some facts on the biotech foods and then how it works, and give a nice simple example that hopefully we all understand. I know my grandparents might not get this example. It's a little technology based, but so you mentioned it's the most tested science in the world, mm-hmm. this particular vein, and yeah, that holds true. We have no risk, and there's a pile of papers, and I actually had someone kind of go over some of the topics I wanted to touch on, and they said maybe you should give some sources, and I said I don't have time to list that many sources, because there is a number of sources that say that there's absolutely no more risk between genetically modified things and, I guess you can call them, and people can't see the air quotes, but natural things here. And with my background breeding, I won't bore your listeners with some of the past methods of altering genetics, be it mutation or radiation, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I like to use the example, that's kind of like a shotgun blast. And what we're doing now is, you know, you've got a syringe and you're doing if you look at all the anti-media stuff, they always have syringes going into apples and oranges and things that are not actually genetically modified, but that people eat every day just to scare them. But
yeah.
So the reason that there's no more risk is because no part of the whole process of genetically modifying something is harmful. And the genes that they're moving from usually just plant to plant, those have been studied for decades. A lot of them, the research on these genes started back in the 1970s. So, I mean, what's that? What are we up to? Over 40 years now?
Yeah, that's right.
That's older than I am, so to me it's a long time.
Time has flown by.
Yeah. So these products have been available for 17 years out in the marketplace. Probably we're getting close to 18 now, I guess. And there's not been one illness or death that can be linked to the genetic modification of foods.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of people that are concerned. One of the questions that I get asked a lot is, you know, what about the long-term effects? And my answer has always been, how long is long-term? When is enough enough?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say 25 years. And I know a lot of other things, and this is mostly U.S. policy, but in terms of the effects of harmful drugs and things like that, I think it was crack cocaine was 25-year study to kind of see the effects of that before they said, okay, we're convinced it's not good.
It sounds like the smoking lobby. They did the same thing. They fought the fact that cigarette smoking is pretty hazardous to your health. So
yeah, and I guess once they figure out how long, and we'll see. Well, I guess we'll see how that plays out. That's a little above my pay grade, so I won't worry about it. But so how does this actually work?
Yeah, tell our listeners about that.
I've got it dumbed down pretty good here, and a lot of this is from Dr. Folta, but. So one way to look at it is when you're genetically modifying something, what are you actually doing? You're turning something off on that is normally off or that wasn't there at all. Or conversely, you're turning something off that's normally on.
Mm-hmm.
And genetics and DNA, it can be pretty intimidating to people that don't have the background in it. And I know getting the background certainly wasn't easy. And, I'm sure a few of your listeners that attended University of Guelph and took that plant genetics class would agree with me, but it's not an easy thing to understand. So I like to use this technology analogy that Dr. Folta uses. It's the simplest one that I've come across, and I've heard a couple other ones, which of course you forget almost instantly. But if you look at DNA as the hard drive of your computer,
mm-hmm.
It's got all the information in there, everything's stored safely. And then if you think of RNA, which is kind of the messenger RNA transport molecules that deliver the message of what you're supposed to make, think of those as kind of the recipes to make proteins, and you keep those on a USB stick.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put your USB stick into the hard drive, get a specific file or recipe, and use that. And then if you think of the protein creation, so kind of making the recipe, think of that as your printer. So you put your USB stick in your printer, and that prints out your protein, and your proteins are what we need to survive various amino acids and things that are used for cell development and other things that I don't understand about human anatomy. So this genetic modification technology is basically adding or subtracting things to your hard drive using your USB stick. It's pretty simple when you look at it like that. Does that make sense to you, Jeff?
That's a pretty good analogy. I find infographics or a corollary like that actually opens up. It really opens up or puts a new perspective on what the science is, or the explanation is. That's great. I like
that. So that sometimes when you're explaining it to people and you use an analogy like that, you get that little aha moment where they say, oh, okay, that doesn't seem that bad. I do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's still a room for fear to be had there. Well, if you're messing with DNA, who knows what you're making? What if I start growing an arm out of my back? Those kind of outrageous claims. But the whole process is highly specific. Like I said, we're not just taking a shotgun blast and hoping that what we want to happen just sticks. We're very specific with it. Most plants, the genome is entirely mapped, so we know where all the genes are, what they do.
Yep.
It's even from when I started school to now, it's leaps and bounds ahead of where it was, and it's almost shocking for me.
It's crazy, isn't it, how it's changed so fast.
And you know that if you cross these two lines in a certain temperature, you're likely to get a crossover event at this area in the chromosome, and it's down to such a small molecular level that it's hard to fathom, really, mm-hmm. but it's very specific. And the example that the almost the longest term genetic modification out there is the BT gene. That's a gene from a bacteria that produces a protein that acts as a pesticide for the plant. It targets a specific pest during a specific time in that pest life cycle,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, that's a pretty small window and pretty specific target. So, and that protein, that natural pesticide protein that gets produced in the plant instead of being applied by the grower, binds to a very specific site in that pest during that window of its life cycle mm-hmm. and that specific pest. So now we're getting a little more drilled in. And what the way that that Dr. Folta described it is, it's exactly like a lock and key.
Mm.
So that protein is your key, and it only fits on a certain site and works on a certain site in that one pest. So.
And this is significant because in the past, previous technology was more the shotgun approach where you applied a controlling pesticide, but it would be widely dispersed in the environment and all over the place. This is meant to be a bit more specific.
Yeah, so the kind of end result of that is there's less pesticide going out into the environment. It's reducing costs for growers, which is always good. You're lowering your chance of resistance by not having that chemical out there, and you're basically eliminating any residue that's going to be on your crop and in your fields and the soil, etc. In fact, since 2003, 75% less chemical has been applied. Safer products are being used now. The big one out there is the glyphosate molecule.
Mm-hmm.
It's applied on a large number of acres, maybe too much. I don't know. That's a different debate. Basically, this product is it's very well understood. It's been around since the late 70s. It has the same toxicity as table salt once you get down to it, which
I should repeat,
I guess,
that again.
I guess if you talk to your doctor and you have too much table salt, I guess that's an issue too once you get a little older with certain things. But it's a very low impact on the environment, and it's a very simple and well understood process. And I don't want to go into it because I'll probably screw it up. But it basically just suppresses one thing and. It works. So yeah. That's kind of a very brief and high level overview of
mm-hmm.
of how it works, and I encourage people that if they want to know more, the information's out there. There's all kinds of scientific journal articles and peer reviewed stuff that you can look into, or if you really like textbooks, I can recommend a few that if you have trouble sleeping, that would help you out.
Well, that's good. That's great, Chris, and I hope our listeners can hear in that description a bit of the science of what's happening with the GMOs, and when we move into our section, we'll talk more about what has gone wrong with getting this message out, the misinformation, and why people, part of the reason why we think we are where we are nowadays. Good stuff, Chase. That's super, and did a good job putting it together. Well, let's play another song.
Sure.
Let's see if I got the right this time. So I got tuned in here. This is the a song called Brand New, is that? And it's
that's the band is Brand New.
Brand New, and the song is Gloria Seek Transport.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds okay. Good to me. So this was kind of the next evolution of my musical taste. This one's getting into university and meeting new people and kind of expanding my world a little bit. So.
All right. Here we go. We're going to play it. We'll be right back, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here on January 14th, 2014. See you shortly.
Upon arrival, the guests had all stared. sleeping wet and clear. Depressed, he'd headed straight for the stairs.
No longer cool, but a boy in a stitch.
Unprepared for a life full of lies and failing relationships.
He keeps his hands low,
he's a man bullet.
He's waiting by the toe and his eyes give him the open the day.
His stomach turns and he thinks of throwing it.
But the body on the bed that gets forward and he starts growing.
People, focus! The reason that I have to believe you are too hard to sell.
Quite fair.
Despite everything he learned from his friends, he doesn't feel so prepared.
She's breathing quiet and soon
he is gasping for air.
This is the first and last time he says.
She fakes a smile and presses her hips into his.
He keeps his hands pinned down at his side.
He's holding back from telling her exactly what it really feels like.
He is a lamb,
she is the slaughter.
She's moving way too fast and all he wanted was to hold her.
Nothing that he tells is really having an effect.
He whispers that he loves her, but she's probably only looking for
so much more than he could ever give.
A life realized in a meaningful relationship.
He keeps his hands pinned down at his side.
He waits for it to end and for the aching in his gut.
He's a people, focus. The reason that I have to believe you are too hard to sell.
Try out inside yourself.
Take your taste up. It used to be the reason I'm breathing out. It's choking me up.
I'm Ryan Garapi from ClearPath Robotics. You are listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, we actually had something that worked that time, but we'll get you to do a promo here for us too, Chase. I'm not too sure what happened with other promos. I'll go back and figure out what's going on this thing. Okay, good stuff. We're having a great time, folks. Agriculture Show, Chase Phillips is my guest today, and we're talking a little bit about biotech and food and some of the other issues of the day. Our first section was really about the science of it, and now we want to move into a discussion about, why in fact do we have this resistance to this stuff? a little bit about, is this... There's so many reasons, explanations of why it has really, this has stirred up so much controversy. Of course, we have to decide how many people are really concerned about it. I mean, everybody's concerned about the food, as we pointed out in our very first segment. But it's not an issue that you shouldn't be concerned about food. We all should be concerned about food. But why is this one coming along? So, Chase, you've done a good job here. You want to start into some of what you're thinking about, your thoughts on the what has gone wrong with getting the message out to society?
Yeah, sure. So the meat of this issue is just based around misinformation, primarily against agriculture and even science in general. So it's, you're attacking two pretty big staples of our whole fabric of society here. And one thing I wanted to start with, Jeff, with this is I read an article not too long ago, and it was fairly neutral. It wasn't for one side or the other. And it was written by a group that had gone out and done a poll. And I think they polled 100 people or 500 people or something like this. I don't remember the number offhand, but they asked the people, what are GMOs? What is genetic modification? Do you know what it is? And it was a yes or no question. 14% of the respondents knew what GMO stood for and knew what it was. And then the next question they asked, possibly not the next question, but one of the other questions they asked was, do you oppose GMOs? And 65% of the people opposed it.
Yes.
So that kind of just gives you a little bit of a little start there on on the issue. So you have, you know, a majority of people are against it, but only a small percentage actually know what it is. So how does that happen? That's, you've got people running around out there, and they've created their own scientific journals. And again, you can't see my air quotes, but they have their own journals. They have websites, very official looking. I can name names here, but I'll probably just keep it to a couple. And really what they're doing is just they're playing on fears and emotions of people, because there's such a large amount of ignorance out there. People just don't know what it is. Only 14% of the people asked knew.
Right.
And I'd say it's a vast majority of people just don't understand. And that's why I wanted to start with a little bit of science and hopefully give just a taste of what it is and how it works and how much it's been studied. But it's so much easier to scare people than it is to educate people. And
that's true.
And 10 minutes of Dr. Oz talking to the housewives of North America has more impact than, you know, somebody taking a university course for 4 months.
Yeah.
It's it puts that seed of doubt in people's minds and just gets the imagination going. And the way they do it is they use very bold statements and headlines, and they kind of prey on emotional aspects of people's lives. So if I say GMO corn will kill your kids, you know, that if you're a mother, you're going to be concerned. Well, you don't want your kids to die. Mm-hmm. So why is it killing your kids? And if there's a choice, which there is, and there's lots of choices, well, not lots, but I guess there's a couple of choices around GMOs that people can pick, and that's their right, and, you know, all the luck to them.
Yeah, I saw something interesting about that. So they're showing that these rats got these tumors from GMO corn. But, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I know I looked back into it. And so as per most research situations, they use a breed of mice that is especially adapted to respond quickly to cancer. So presumably, you know, so they would be showing signs of cancer way before.
Well, I can elaborate on that for you a little bit, Jeff. So that's the Seralini paper out of France that was really all the anti-GMO and all the activist folks grabbed hold of that. That was the first study that showed that it was harmful.
Mm-hmm.
The major flaw that actually got it debunked by the entire scientific community and then later retracted from the journal that it was printed in was that they had a very small sample size for one, but they also didn't show a control. So that's what you're touching on is control rat had almost as many tumors as the ones that were fed the GM corn and the corn with Roundup on it.
Yeah.
So they conveniently left that image out of the paper. So they have this very impactful image, and I've seen a lot of the images they've got golf balls coming out of the side of their heads, big tumors. But what they didn't show you was that the one that was just fed normally also had the same tumors. So
I'm feeling like a Klingon. There's just no honor left amongst scientists.
It's honor. It's tough out there, and that's kind of my next point is there's certain journals out there that are basically pay to publish, and I wasn't as aware of this as I could have been because I don't read every journal out there. But Dr. Folta touched on it a little bit, and I looked into it a little bit more, and there's people that are writing articles and either paying to have them published or they're getting them published in journals with incredibly low standards in terms of the peer review process and looking through them. And if you're going to, and I know from my own experience with trying to get stuff published that journals are very picky on standards, fonts, everything, content, and you have to have very tried, tested, and true science to get that in a respectable journal. Mm. And a lot of these people are kind of getting around that. So one little story that that I heard out there was that there was a group that made up a paper, completely fabricated it. It was an outrageous, I don't know what it was, just some kind of outrageous content. And they sent it out to 100 journals, and there were quite more than what they expected accepted the paper as good science and were willing to publish it. And they had to let them in on the gag that it's not real. So that's a little bit disturbing for me, having come up in the scientific background that I have now. But it's just journals like that. I don't know, every time I watch the news, which is more and more rare now just because of this misinformation stuff, and you don't know who to trust and what to believe. But a lot of these reporters will say, oh, a study show and a scientist say, but they never tell you what studies or what scientists, and you're just mm-hmm. led to believe it. So that those kind of tactics are really eroding people's trust in science and scientists and the whole process of, and I'll touch on that in a minute here, but the people that are out there that are the loudest voice right now are the activist folks, self-proclaimed experts. They call themselves expert in GMO, but they have no credentials, no schooling, no background. They don't worry about opinions from the opposition. So in this case, the advocates for GMOs, they don't worry about farmers' opinions, the people using it, processors or anything like that. They just want the opinions of, John Q. Public and what he thinks about it. And I'm pretty sure they screen people beforehand. they don't recognize science. They claim that anytime that someone tries to put facts and studies and science in the way of their claims, they just say that scientist is he's a puppet for one of the big multinational corporations. He's he got bought off, which is very effective way to discredit some of the science. And a lot of these people are actually anti-corporation people who have found a really nice little niche to take on corporations by going after the science of their, mm-hmm. I guess, bread and butter, you could call it. But
they've probably gone above and beyond what would normally be called healthy cynicism or skeptics.
Yeah.
They've taken a bit. I mean, you certainly have to be, that's part of living. You have to be somewhat skeptic and cynical about things, but you can't go too far either.
Yeah, and I mean, when you do, and when these people are getting credits for being experts and they're getting people's ears, you know, we're starting to see some pretty discouraging results from that. And one example that I look at is bad government policy. When governments are basing policy off popular opinion rather than science, mm-hmm. you know, then so far it's been pretty benign things that I know of. Again, I don't listen to every news outlet out there and I don't read every scientific journal, but the one that affects me directly is the cosmetic pesticide ban in Ontario. Mm-hmm. If I want to go out and play soccer, which, you know, that's not a frequent occurrence for me, but when I want to go out and use kind of community fields and facilities, they're covered in dandelions or poorly kept, there's weeds, and, you know, not only is it not aesthetically pleasing, it's sometimes it's inconvenient. I myself suffer from allergies and the kind of, you know, the big season for that with the ragweed and dandelions and grasses, and it's not so fun to be running around when you're sneezing and your nose is running and you get the itchy eyes and all the other familiar symptoms that we see on the hundreds of different commercials for allergy medicines. But the other, in that same vein, is with the claims that they're making, and I've heard people telling me that GMOs are responsible for autism. That we never had autism before GMOs started. Mm-hmm. People with food allergies, peanuts, gluten, etc., that's all caused by GMOs, and none of that existed beforehand. And just, you know, wild stuff like that. So while they're convincing the public that GMOs are the cause of this,
right,
which, based on what I know and what I've experienced over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, it's probably not the cause. So the real root cause is just being ignored and allowed to run rampant out there. So that's kind of scary.
It's distracting this research. Yeah.
Yeah, and distracting research, and you're delaying beneficial things too. And the big example for that is golden rice. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't aware, golden rice is a rice that's been genetically modified to produce more vitamin A, and as well as some other things in it. That turns the color a little more orange than your traditional white rice. So they call it golden rice, and they've developed it for countries in Africa where people are deficient in vitamin A, and it's causing problems with eyesight and various other health issues. Again, not a nutritionist, so I won't dig into that too much, but that's being held up by activists – in North America, if the activists were from Africa and legitimately didn't want it, then that's one thing. But when you have people who just don't want GMOs in general saying, let's get rid of golden rice, it's garbage. Mm-hmm. And I believe David Suzuki was also opposed to it. And it's just, and you know, there are certain advocates of, or not advocates, but opponents of GMOs have over the years kind of, you know, reconsidered and changed their tune a little bit. And the most famous, of course, is Mark Linus.
Mm-hmm.
The,
yeah.
He did a tell-all interview and he's done a lot of appearances actually now. And I remember the one little excerpt from it was that, you know, he apologized to some of the farmers in the UK that he had gone out and burned their fields of GMO crops, costing them untold amounts of money. So he said, I was wrong, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he paid for the...
No.
I don't think he paid them back, but... no, there's just a lot of people slowing things down. I know with certain products in the U.S., there's been appeals and there's been requests for additional scrutiny with environmental impact studies, et cetera, on things like Roundup Ready alfalfa and Roundup Ready sugar beets in the U.S. And I know I followed the sugar beet issue a little bit. This was a few years ago. And farmers actually had to just plow their fields down of sugar beets they had planted and replant something else. So it's, I don't want to guess how much that costs, but,
yeah,
you know.
Quite a bit, yeah. Well, it's certainly a science is under attack in many ways. So even now, in 2013 and 14, there's been this general news item come up that the federal scientists and other groups are suggesting that they're being, there's cutbacks. They're suggesting that the government doesn't want as much science and decisions.
Yeah, they're not worried about the rigorous testing involved and the costs associated with that.
Yeah, and they're telling the federal scientists, you can't speak to these issues because it has to be consistent with, you know, you just can't independently say what you think about these issues for whatever reason. So it's not unusual. It's not just in the GMO discussion about the where science, it certainly never meant, it should be a primary source of your decision-making, not, you know, God-like, omnipotent, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. it's really wrong to stifle it, to put science to less than others, I would think, in decision-making.
Yeah, I agree, and the yeah. conspiracy theorist in me is, you know, it's always saying that, you know, politicians are doing it to public opinion so that they can, you know, get more votes, but...
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hope that that's not true, but I guess time will tell. The last kind of thing I'd
yep.
like to mention here too, Jeff, is that because we're ignoring some of the science and taking different routes, oftentimes now we're starting to rely on less useful and sometimes potentially dangerous technologies and products. So the one case, if we have to go backwards on some of this technology we've developed, we might be going back to using larger amounts of pesticide and more dangerous pesticide for the environment. So
mm-hmm.
I don't understand why people would want us to go back that way, and hopefully they do a little research and get some education on that whole thing and sit down and talk with someone. But we'll talk about
let's tell in a second little bit of our next segment of our show, and we'll get into a little bit about, you know, how the solution. How can we fix this up?
Yeah.
So
what can we do?
What can we do? I like that. That's a good synopsis of what has been and the science and what we're up against. Okay, it's song time. Now, I got it tuned up here. It is a song. The song is Everlast by What's It Like?
No, other way around.
I'm sorry. Your host is obviously woefully inadequate.
You've got the you got all the information right, just in the wrong order. It's Everlast, and the song's called "What It's Like." It's kind of a neat little story, and just gives different perspectives on situations you might see in normal social settings.
Sounds good. I mean, clearly, if I get things backwards and you just switch to an explanation show, this is serious when your host is getting confused. All right, we'll play the song. We'll be right back, folks. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in.
job, you fucking slobs, all he replied. God forbid you ever had to walk a mile in his shoes. Said you really might know. Said he was in love. Said, don't worry about a thing, baby, darling, the man you've been dreaming of. But 3 months later, he said he won't date or return her call. And she swear, goddamn, if you find that man cutting off his balls. And then she heads for the clinic and she gets some static walking through the door. They call her a killer and they call her a sinner and they call her a whore. You ever had to walk a mile in a shoe? Say you really might know what it's like to have to choose. Then you really might know what it's like. 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 Rich man beg, I seen a good man sin, I seen a tough man cry. I seen a loser win, and a sad man grin, I heard an honest man lie. I seen the good side of bad, and the downside of up, and everything between. I licked the silver spoon, drank from the golden cup, smoked the finest green. I stroked the baddest dimes, at least a couple of times. Stacks out on the corner with drugs. He liked to hang out late. He liked to get shit faced to keep the pace with thugs. Until late one night, there was a big gunfight, and Max lost his head. He pulled out his chrome 45, talked some shit, and wound up dead. Now his wife and his kids are caught in the midst of all of his pain. You know, it crumbles that way, at least that's what they say when you play.
So I'm Bob Thirlwall from DeKalb, Canada, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, we're back. Oh, there's a familiar face. I wonder what Bob's doing today.
Nice to hear from Bob Thirlwall there.
Yeah. So, well, Chase, we're having a real riot this afternoon here. Boy, we've covered a lot of stuff, but we want to finish this show off in fine fashion, so we're going to... In our last section here before we wrap up, we're going to talk a little bit about some solutions. How do we resolve the science facts with people's feelings and with the misinformation out there? We got some good ideas here. Let's plow into this and see what we got here. So where are the your first point is, where does the demand for these products come from?
So, you know, I don't want to be all doom and gloom here with all the negative stuff that we just talked about. So try and put a positive spin on the end here. But basically, you know, we have to have products out there that are going to benefit farmers. They're going to benefit consumers, needy people, and ultimately be safe for the environment. So the demand for this stuff really is driven by the people out there, the consumers that are looking for cheap food. And then processors and farmers are looking for maximum profit, so they want to do things as cheap as possible. So, but they also have to be safe, and that's where the government comes in and has their aspect of it to make sure that, you know, we're not seeking the lowest common denominator, and things are safe to use for the environment and for the next generation. So, and then people that need stuff, that's another driver, especially for some of these higher yielding products. And there's a whole host. I've got notes on probably about 8 different projects and potential future technologies that could enhance staples of a lot of third world countries and really help those people out. So it's once the science gets accepted by the populace, I think things can move pretty quickly for enhancing the quality of life of a lot of these people out there.
So it's a good goal.
So I'll pose a question for you, Jeff.
Yes.
So, you know, I mentioned that, you know, trying to maximize profit and stuff, but I understand that you grow some of these genetically modified seeds on your farm. So, so what's your reasoning for that?
Well, the my farming career started in 1973. So, I've seen where weeds, the lack of weed control, can drop your yield by half if the weeds are overcompeting. I've seen where those same weeds so damage the plant that they're more disease prone from other things. I've also seen where insects have been just the damaged crop, so it's almost not only is the yield reduced because the plant's damaged, but it's almost unharvestable. So these GMO things are just amazing, right? So because they take away a lot of the difficulties, like they wouldn't even have to, you'd have to even increase the yield of these plants, except that the yields do increase because you have less losses. So it's an appropriate technology. It's good from a farm perspective. You know, you can, there's nothing more unpleasant as a farmer to harvest a crop that is so damaged from disease and weeds that it's just a battle to take it off and to get any kind of yield out of it. So it's sound from a farm perspective for growing things. Having said that, I do know I have farm friends who have worked in that niche market, which is, it can cover many things, but it's things like local food or labels or organic or something, those kind of labels, and they're doing a very good living in it. So we want all farmers to make a good living. I'm mostly in the camp of production agriculture, and I find the GMOs really good.
Yeah, I've had debates with organic producers, and we kind of landed on the same note in that if everyone goes to organic, then your niche market disappears, and that becomes the mainstream, and your premiums and all your other perks that you get from being in that niche market kind of fade into the background, and and then you're competing with everyone else, and
they're in the same problem.
It took them a while to realize it, but they're actually for some of these changes in production agriculture as well. They wouldn't outright say it, but you could see the understanding go across their face.
You know, it's funny you should say that, and you know, one of the rejoiners that would be that. You know, you may as well be a production agriculturist. It's a race to the bottom anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
But we, you know, more power to an individual who tries to find something that he can raise his, make some money, raise his family, get the kids to college, that sort of thing. And and if whatever the consumer wants, the consumer will get. So that's, it's okay. But GMOs have their place in production agriculture, and they're part of the huge opportunity we have in North America to choose from all these different sources, whether we want food that's from here or there, whatever it's done, it can be done, easily done.
And, you know, I support the choice. I support them having those options. That's it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So you're putting the host to work here. I think you should go back to your script here. What else do we want to talk about here? You got a bunch of jazz.
Really the last, you know, we know who's opposing GMOs. Those are the activists that are against it. So that's it's pretty solid. The one thing to watch out for is, and I touched on it with the golden rice thing, is a lot of the activists are nowhere near the problem, and they don't really have an association with some of the issues that GM crops are trying to solve. So it's, I take what they say with a pretty big grain of salt. You know, Jeff, what can we do? How can we fix this? What's one way that you can come up with that, you know, people can solve this?
Well, you know what? It right off the bat, and you and I discussed it before we came in, that the we're talking about what's good about GMO, the science. And one of the important things I believe is that we first off, as you mentioned, recognize that people, it is legitimate to have concerns about your food. That's okay.
Yep.
We want that. In fact, GMO would be better with good scrutiny on it. What we're just talking about is appropriate, or you know, what's the right level. And you know, we're in kind of a science. Science has been taking a bit of a beating lately with things. But it's also true to recognize, you know, we're humans and we don't. Rational human behavior is an oxymoron. So you can only go so far with a science-based solution to anything, unfortunately, because the proponents of it are not they're not rational either.
Yeah.
But it is very annoying. It just seems too bad that people are so afraid or don't know the science. Or boy, I know we all get off track sometimes, but it just seems a little bit over the top with the how some of the attack against GMO has gone. It's just really surprising. Although maybe the consumer is smarter than we think. I have a notion the consumer already pretty well knows, and we have more fun talking about these, you know, Daddy Warbucks versus Anne Green Gables type.
Yeah, I think the biggest decisions are made with the wallet, and there was one interesting study that I came across, and I have no source for this, unfortunately, but I read an article where a group had taken set up a roadside stand, and initially they had a bunch of produce, and they had it all marked as conventional,
mm-hmm.
and you know, production agriculture type of stuff, and they had a price, and people would come up and they say, okay, would, you know, is this a fair price? Like, oh yeah, and then they had the people go away, and then the next day they came back and they had everything as organic, and they had the price marked up. And they said, oh, is this a fair price? And they said, yeah, no problem. And they said, well, which would you prefer? Would you prefer to pay this price for organic, or would you prefer to pay the other price for conventional? And the people said, well, I would pay for the organic. That's only a little bit more. I would pay for it, no question. So the next day they came back, and they had a different group, a third group, and they had organic on one half of the stand at that price, and they had conventional at the price on the other side, and the conventional got cleaned out within the first couple hours based on price. So it's kind of interesting that someone took a look at that, and I don't know if that's a sound study or not, but it's an interesting anecdote anyways.
Yeah, it's interesting. We pay what we can afford at a level of quality that we can are comfortable with or can afford.
Yeah. Yeah. I know in my university days, my quality of food was a lot lower than it is now, just based on my income. So it's that rings true for sure. But what I would say, if what we could do is just have people go out and educate yourselves. Find sources with credentials, talk to them. But the best way to do it is just go out and talk to farmers. They're the ones producing your food. They're the ones that you should be talking to. And I'm not saying go and berate farmers if you're against GMOs, because they have to make a living too. But I would say just go out and talk to people and educate yourself, and so you can form your own educated opinion. And that's something that seems like almost a lost art now. I know there's plenty of articles out there describing people's process of doing that and how they try and wade through all the misinformation and just the diehard opinions. And Dr. Folta had a good point, too, and one of his closing things was you're not going to change the mind of the people that are the diehard. You know, their mind's made up. You're not mm-hmm. going to change those people. The ones you have to try and influence are the people that don't know and are primarily ignorant and still questioning, and give them the facts and say, here's the science behind it. Mm-hmm. Here's how it works. Here's what it does. You know, you make your opinion, and you try and do that in the most unbiased way that you can.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's good. Like when you mentioned Dr. Mark Linus, who he has come in more in favor of GMO, and basically he observed amongst his own thought process that he based his opposition on climate action. That is, you know, he wanted more action on climate, and he said these are the facts, and he showed the trend lines. And then he observed his own decision-making process when it came to GMOs. He says, I didn't do this scientifically. I did this on an emotional level. And to resolve that, his own personal discrepancy, his hypocrisy, he decided, well, why don't I, rather than attack climate change because I don't want it to happen, I'll just do science to GMOs. And so he sort of leads. He's an example of how a person who has... believed one thing and then upon further inspection decided to make sure he was true to his own convictions.
Yeah, and it's easy to scare people, but it's hard to educate them.
Yeah, so there's an example where people could. And like I say, we don't want to say, you know, people got to feel comfortable. And if you're not comfortable yet, that's okay. But please, examine to the best of your ability the claims or counterclaims of both sides.
Yep.
And that's all the best you can do.
And I can't claim to be an expert one way or the other. I mean, I'm fairly well educated, but mm-hmm. I just like to point out that we need to have this discourse. And you mentioned earlier that a lot of people are skeptical of things and they've gone over the top, some of these people,
yeah.
But you still need a healthy amount when you're bringing anything new, just to try it and test it and make sure that it works. And so far from the scientific community, there's a lot of thumbs up.
I think anyone in the scientific community say it is also true. We should continue to watch this product.
Yep.
Obviously, that's true. And so far, nothing. So this is good. But no one gets a free pass.
Yep. No, I agree. Keep an eye on it. And that, you know, that keeps my paycheck rolling in, Jeff, testing all this technology and keeping an eye on it and managing it. But, you know, the other thing I think we can do is, you know, you got to keep yourself educated, so you should probably just keep listening to the Agriculture Show here on CKMS 100.3 Sound FM.
You're the best, Chase, because I was just going to say at some point, you know, that this the goals we've expressed is exactly what we're trying to do on our show is to bring some news to our urban listeners about agriculture, and hope we've done that. So you're very kind for doing that. I'll put you to work after this next song here with the same sort of thing. That's a great little clip. I'm going to use that one.
All right.
So let's get into our last song here. Now, I got something here. This the Blue Rodeo, and the song is Bad Timing. See, I got that one right.
You got it.
Okay. So, all right. So we're going to play that one, and then we'll just do a quick five-minute wrap-up to finish off today's great show. So stay tuned, folks. Keep it locked in, and you're listening to the Agriculture Show, episode 70. We'll talk to you in shortly.
It's me, what a big surprise, calling you up from a restaurant round the bend. I just got in from way up north, making it tired now, and I could use a friend. I might be a fool to think that you do to see me again. I know it's been a while since I've talked to you. Nothing wrong, just nothing ever goes as planned. Many times I thought I'd call, didn't have your number in my hand. I know it's true, you'd never do the same thing to me.
us of the cost of everything we've lost. That time in that soul. And maybe soon there'll come a day when no more tears will fall. We each forgive a little bit, then we both look back on it. It's just that time in that soul. So many plans, something always seemed to turn out wrong. I never could catch up to you, moving on and doing all you want.
Hi, this is Chase Phillips, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture, representing the farm producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thank you. And that's exactly what we've been doing today, hasn't it? We're doing our best here to try to bring together what the public and the industry are looking for.
It'd be nice.
Yes. So let's do a quick little wrapper-upper here, Chase, before we call it a day. Just to review our, remind our listeners, we started out with a little introduction of Chase and his home, born and raised in New Liskeard, and now working in beautiful southern Ontario. And trained, has a master's in plants and soybean breeding. And then we got into second segment a little bit about what the problem is right now, and I mean the science of biotech. And some interesting facts there, Chase. Where did you get that one about that it's like salt? Where's that little bit here? It says the risk of glyphosate says toxic as salt.
Yeah, I don't have a scientific article for you on that one because
I've seen that before.
I didn't want to bog it down with with quotes from articles, but that one was mentioned by Dr. Kevin Folta at the talk at the Southwest Ag Conference last week. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that one over the years from our esteemed friend, Mr. Brian Legasek. Had told me that when I first started way back working with a seed company, that don't worry too much about spilling any glyphosate on your clothes because it's just salt.
Salt, so basically. Yeah.
Not sure how safe that was, and we certainly ratcheted up the safety stuff as time went on, but that's where we started. So
that was our second part. Then the third part, we talked a little bit about those. Those news agencies and where the anti-GMO lobby is coming from, recognizing that this is maybe as much a few individuals, not the majority. This could be a convenient shuffling of the items of facts, quote unquote, to lead to different directions, or else just capitalizing on the fact that people. It's easy to elicit a fear response of people than it is to elicit a positive response.
Yeah, shuffling of facts or complete absence of them in some cases. But the two sources, too, that I don't want to say battled with, but that have been kind of thrown back at me the most are the Natural News. It's a website that's out there that has a really nice, catchy title, but really no accreditation behind that one. And then the Institute for Responsible Technology sounds very official, but really it's just a website that there's a so-called expert doing kind of out of his basement. So it's amazing, you put a title on something like that, and if I didn't look twice, I'd believe it, no question. Sounds very official.
And our previous segment to this last outro is we talked a little bit about some solutions might be out there, and part of the solution process was that there is a demand for these products, and they're better than what they used to be. And it's a little bit last of that last segment was about what we can do to get better informed. I think so.
Yeah, and I think that really the main point that I wanted to send out to people is just encourage people to go out there and find the facts on their own, look at peer-reviewed, accredited sources and articles. From real scientific journals, talk to experts, talk to university professors. Everybody has someone that is associated with a farm in their either in their family tree or in their social circle that they should go out and just have a little conversation. Ask them why they grow GMOs and what if they have any concerns and go from there. And really, the idea is educate yourself and make an informed opinion. On your own, rather than just taking it from, popular culture like Dr. Oz or Oprah Winfrey.
So that's pretty well, I think, covered up everything we were going to do on this segment. Any other last thoughts? You're looking forward to another season of more crop research and so on. We've got a full slate, I'm sure.
Well, more than a full slate, Jeff. They keep me busy, that's for sure.
You may be chuckling. I think of it now that the science is evolving so quickly. I mean, I thought I graduated in the 70s, and it occurred to me about 4 years later that my skill set was starting to slip. But it suddenly occurred to me that when you say that, because the exponential increase in knowledge, presumably, that, within a few years, you'd say, this is stuff that...
Luckily,
is that true? Is that defined?
It's a battle to keep educated on the new technologies that are coming out, and working for a seed company as I do, they do a pretty good job of putting us out in front of it. In fact, a lot of the stuff I test, I'm looking at it about 5 or 6 years before you'll see it as a grower. Yeah. So that helps me kind of stay ahead of the curve a little bit. But it's a battle to stay ahead of everything and. And like I said, I try to read as much as I can, but it's a constant battle just to stay ahead of all the information and new technology and sciences that are out there. So it's makes life interesting, though, I'll tell you that.
I should say.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a real treat, Chase. So we'll probably call it a day here. We'll do one more radio promo for our files, and I've got tuned up here for our listeners as we're. Later on the show, the last of your song, which is Garth Brooks, was I Got Friends in Low Places.
Sure.
So what do we do? you want to roll off a quick promo there? Are you in got your tongue all tied up and want to do that again, or want to do a few song first?
I'll fire one off right here, Jeff.
Okay, take a breath, and then we'll start.
All right. This is Chase Phillips, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Perfect. I can use that.
I hope so.
Okay.
Some of my best work.
Well, you got to, you know, it's like most people's voices are great if they just relax and speak, and it's in naturally, it's good. All right. It's our show for today, folks. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for coming out, Chase. And we'll see you next week. Or as my previous DJ said, 120 hours, I think he said it was. Okay, folks, we'll talk to you later. Take care. Have a great day. And enjoy your outdoor and have a safe week.